The Oregon Historical Society has an exhibit of the first four-year Chicano College in the United States on display through April 27, 2025. Colegio Cesar Chavez, The Legacy Lives On. It's a bilingual exhibition that highlights the institution's significance and legacy in Oregon. Joining the exchange to help us learn more is Natalia Fernandez, a tenured associate professor at Oregon State University and curator of the Oregon Multicultural Archives. Welcome, Professor.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for this opportunity to share more information about Colegio Cesar Chavez.
Okay, well, you said it way better than I could. Tell me a little bit about yourself and the work you do at Oregon State.
So I am a member of Oregon State University's Special Collections and Archives Research Center. And as you shared, I curate the Oregon Multicultural Archives, as well as the OSU Queer Archives. And I'm an archivist, which means that my work is to engage with communities to help them document and share their stories, and if they would like to do so through our archive. And then we make those materials and stories available to the public so that people can learn more about those communities' histories.
How does someone get into the role that you're in? From a young child's interest in the arts, how do you get there? What's your path?
So it's common. It's not 100% required, but it's common for archivists to have master's degrees. There are programs in library science, and some are specific to archival special collection studies. And so if people are interested, there are many programs across the United States. Many are remote, some are hybrid, that offer that opportunity. Some people come through our profession through public history or history of other related fields. Archivists are kind of cousins to librarians. Most people know who librarians are, but within the profession, there's a wide array of opportunities. And for me, I was really passionate about showcasing communities' histories and helping preserve those stories. I felt that was a way that I could contribute sort of a form of activism to assist, especially communities of color, in preserving and documenting their histories. And what's wonderful about the profession is that you can come to it from any previous profession, any previous interest, any previous field, because obviously history covers so many topics that we encourage people from any background to come into our profession and help us continue our work.
Well, I appreciate that little background. I was just curious. Tell me about the exhibit.
So the exhibit showcases the history of the Colegio Cesar Chavez, which operated from 1973 to 1983 in Mount Angel, Oregon. So a really significant part of our history here in Oregon and for the United States, since it was the first four-year accredited Chicano-run college in our country. And the institution's primary goal was to provide equal education opportunities for Chicano and minority students. They created a Chicano bilingual bicultural curriculum. It was a college without walls education program, so really focused on experiential learning, the tradition of experiential learning. The Colegio was all about empowering students to define their educational goals and needs, remain active in the community, integrate learning with theory and practice. So a lot of things that higher ed is trying to do now with students, and really encouraging them to connect theory and practice and real-world experience with their education. That's what the Colegio was doing 50 years ago. And so the exhibit showcases the Colegio's approach to higher education, as well as the struggles it endured, its community impact, and its legacy.
So what kind of degrees are, and were any of them advanced degrees?
They were mostly the bachelor's degrees at the undergraduate level. Mm-hmm. And students, there was a Chicano studies program. So one of the things that the Colegio was trying to do was really connect students with their histories and their identity, something that was missing at the time from higher education institutions in the 1970s. Students wanted to see their identities and stories are presented. So there's a Chicano Studies program, and it's again, it's interesting that now this is what's happening in higher education institutions, that students are still seeking that kind of representation to exist in colleges today, and they were doing that in the 1970s. And the school was small. It had, over its 10-year period, there were usually under 100 students enrolled, and that fluctuated. But one of the things about Colegio is that its impact was really strong, and that people that came to the college usually were adults who didn't have the opportunity to go to college before, and they had the opportunity to have that educational experience. And whether they graduated from Colegio or not, they then could take that experience into the community. And if they needed to transfer to other institutions or continue education later, they had that really strong foundation.
My guest is Natalia Fernandez, a tenured associate professor at Oregon State University and curator of the Oregon Multicultural Archives. We're talking about an exhibition featuring the first four-year Chicano college in the United States, located in Marion County, Oregon. So, Professor, did this college lead to other similar colleges being launched in other states?
Not necessarily led to. There were, in the 1970s, Chicano communities established a handful of colleges and universities in places like Texas and California and Colorado. So in the Pacific Northwest, for us, it was the Colegio Cesar Chavez. And over the years, I don't know that there are institutions of this kind. I don't think there currently are now. There are Hispanic-serving institutions, so institutions that can get a special designation once they reach a certain level of enrollment of students from the Latinx community. But that nothing like the Colegio Cesar Chavez exists today.
In your opinion, should there be?
I think that's for the community to decide. As part of my work, one of the things that I do is listen to the community and really try and help them in terms of what resources do they need and what would they like to do. My work as an archivist is to help steward community content, and so that really is a conversation of what the community needs and how they can be best served. And so what's happening now is one of my community partners called PODER, Oregon's Latino Leadership Network, PODER, P-O-D-E-R, they are starting to organize community conversations and really come together to think about what is next for the future. So I'm in support of what the community would like, for sure.
Well, how would you compare the conditions today for Latino students versus 40 years ago when the college was still operating?
Well, it's a growing population, and there are more bicultural, more bilingual programs, immersion programs. There are more opportunities and services for the community, but I think that it's still lacking in some areas. There still needs to be more representation in higher education of faculty and curriculum that represents those students' identities so that they can see themselves in the educational system. And there's still a lot that needs to be navigated in the higher educational system. It can be very complicated in financial aid. And so I think that things have changed and gotten better, but also there are still some issues from the 1970s that still exist. And so it's still important that we advocate for those communities' needs.
So this might sound like a silly question, but I'm sure a lot of people have this question. Should I say Latino, Latinx, Hispanic? I know one is language, other is place. Help me out here. What's the proper designation?
There are many terms, and language continues to evolve. For the purposes of the exhibit, I predominantly use the word Chicano, because Chicano and Chicana, since that was the terminology used in the context of the time period. If you're talking about a more specific group like Mexican Americans, then you would use that term. And the community itself, there might be different preferences. Individuals might like Latino, Latina. There is the term Latinx. There's also the term Latine. So terms continue to change. And part of that is to be more inclusive. But, you know, people have different preferences. So it's always, again, it's always important to ask the community what it is that they would like. And people, individuals might have different preferences as well. The important thing is that people try and bring a positive curiosity to the conversation if they're ever engaged with someone discussing what terms to use.
Gotcha. Well, that helps, but I'm not sure. It's like every time I go to a group, I'm going to have to ask. But that's considerate. What do you hope visitors will take away from this exhibit?
So the exhibit is meant to honor and share a significant part of the history of education reform activism led by Oregon's Chicano community at the time, and its allies as well. And it really, the colegio and all who supported the colegio and participated in it, they created this really incredible foundation of social justice advocacy for us to learn from. And what I hope that people take away from it is a really inspiring legacy for us to continue and for people to ask themselves, you know, is the educational system serving the needs of our communities, of our diverse communities? And if not, what can we do to help change the system? Just like they were thinking about 50 years ago, the activism that they were engaged in, what can we do now and how can people get involved if they're interested? So I hope that that's what comes from it, that people learn the history, but then they take those lessons learned from the past to apply to the present day and to the future.
So when you say colegio, am I saying that correctly? Colegio?
Colegio, mm-hmm.
Tell me about the conditions at the time this colegio opened, and why didn't it last very long?
So the exhibit showcases the transition. So it didn't come from nowhere. Mount Angel College existed in Mount Angel prior to the establishment of the Colegio Cesar Chavez. And in the late 60s, 1970s, there was a transition into recruiting from more diverse populations, and especially the Chicano-Chicana community. The college wanted to expand its program and really serve more people. And then the colegios was established officially in 1973 with the name change to Colegio Cesar Chavez. It's a complicated story, but the colegio had many challenges, two of which were federal debt that they inherited from Mount Angel, from the college, and also seeking and receiving accreditation. And it was a challenging time for them because they weren't getting support from other institutions. They reached out to a lot of other higher education institutions, and they were trying to build this college with the resources and information that they had. And it was a struggle, but there were so many passionate people involved, and they had a really great community support base, a lot of allies that supported them. And over the years, it was a constant battle with the federal government and agencies, and there was a lot going on. It's like I said, it's more complicated than this. There's lots of information out there to learn more, but basically it was a long struggle that towards the early 1980s, things were coming to a close, and they lost accreditation, and things just kind of slowed down and closed. So it's a complex story, but what I focus on in the exhibit especially is the innovative approach to education and what the program was and how it functioned. And then I talk about the community activism and then the legacy of colegio. So that's part of what I hope people most take away from the exhibit and the story.
Well, I appreciate you joining us today and shedding light on all this. Unfortunately, we're running out of time, so thank you, Professor.
Thank you so much.